Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. As always, I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me today, co-hosts Amanda Waltz.
Hello, Brian.
Hello. We also have Nick Newman. Yeah. Today we're going to be talking about The Tribe. This is a film that's out in limited release by... Nick, you're usually the guy who can help us out with the names.
Oh, God.
Miroslav?
Yeah, we all could say Miroslav. We need the last name.
Miroslav Slaboshpitsky. That's not that hard. All right.
Okay. Yeah, not too bad.
It looks intimidating.
Yeah.
Anyway, Miroslav Slaboshpitsky. This is a film that has some renown for being composed entirely... I don't know if the actors are, but I know that the school takes place in a school for the deaf. So there's no spoken dialogue. It's all sign language. Without translation, without subtitles, without voiceover. So essentially a silent film.
I believe the actors are deaf.
Okay, they all are?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense, I guess. And that's the only thing we'll be talking about. We'll do a brief run through of what's coming to Blu-ray. But there's not really anything... new to talk about.
Aww.
In the world of film, I guess.
Yeah, it's a pretty
Bleak week.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the summer movie season, guys.
I am super excited for next week when we can talk about the new Mission Impossible movie.
Oh, are we?
Are we not?
I'm fine with that.
What the shit else would we talk about?
I have no idea.
Exactly.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm going on vacation. My vacation starts that day.
No. Oh.
Which is, you know, I'm excited for the vacation, but I also just wish it was a day later so I could see the Rogue Nation
right,
cause
sooner. Right, because I'm pretty sure you like the Mission Impossible series.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I am a De Palma guy, so it only follows that the series would start.
Mm-hmm.
And I, of course, do think the first one might be the best. So
I would probably agree with that. Just
Really?
I was talking to my girlfriend about this, and I was... explaining to her because I don't think she's seen
Brian has a girlfriend. Sorry, do you want to say that your girlfriend?
No, it's cool. I'd say and so we were talking. I don't think she'd ever seen any of the Mission Impossible films, and I was trying to just describe how the series is not like any other series because like there seems to be no coherent like story or theme or even stylistic carryover between the films.
Because Brad Bird did the last one, and I thought that had a pretty distinct humorous vibe about it,
right.
Which I don't think is really present in any of the other films.
No, the first one is like a deadpan. Well, I mean, we can talk about this more next week. But
anyway, let's save it.
We'll save it. This has been a preview of our conversation for next week. That was a long way of saying that I made her watch Mission Impossible 2 with me in a vacuum on Sunday, and it was just as great as that sounds.
I think you can watch any of the movies by themselves and not
right. I think
knowing
it actually
about
would have
any
been better if I had showed her the first one first so she could understand why the second one is such like a crazy, not nightmare, but just inexplicable thing. So we'll get into that next week. We'll talk about the whole series plus Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. But other than that, we can just get straight into our review of The Tribe, which has a thing... on IMDb, a deaf teenager struggles to fit into the boarding school system?
Nope.
No.
Not at all.
That sounds like a charming movie.
Right.
Aww.
Like, oh, everyone else around him can talk, and he's just having trouble getting in? No, not what this is about.
No.
It's vaguely like a live-action Disney movie from 1994, doesn't it?
It does.
This is
like
definitely...
Johnny Tsunami.
Oh, God. This is a deaf Lord of the Flies, you
pretty
guys.
Much.
Yes.
So here is the trailer.
Hello.
I guess. I love it. I love it when I haven't seen a trailer before I say that, because I'm always like, God, what is this even going to look like or sound like for people?
Wait, can we play the trailer for this one?
I don't know. I've never seen the trailer.
I don't think you can.
I played the trailer for... I mean, well, it's funny when I do it for foreign films, because it's just like, here's a bunch of shit-kicking Americans talking about the film. Now here's the trailer. And then it's like impassioned French screaming. And then it's back to us assholes. I love it. It's great. Here's a question. Who here saw this movie?
What do you mean?
Because I didn't.
Wait, you didn't see it?
I'm going to be real with you guys. I watched like 45 minutes of this movie, and then I got locked out of my screener.
Oh, shit.
Now, I didn't say that in any of the emails, because I was tired of us having to push back this podcast recording.
Uh-huh.
So this is going to be like one of those times where I wasn't able to get out to see a film, so I'm going to help facilitate the discussion between you two.
You watched the first 45 minutes of this.
Right.
Only. Oh, you missed. Oh,
I'm sure I did. And I don't care about spoilers for me, so...
Oh, buddy, you missed a lot.
It is cool. I'm willing to sacrifice the thrill of discovery.
I would call it a thrill.
What I'm going to say is... I wanted us to be able to record this, and I did. I like gave this a good faith effort to watch, but my screener was skipping and like stuttering and stopping so much that it took me like an hour and a half to just watch the first 45 minutes.
Wow.
And then I tried A, turning off my computer, and then B, trying it in another browser.
Actually, my screener skipped quite a bit too,
right.
Weirdly enough.
And by that point, I had, I guess, exited out of it and then clicked on the link so much that it was like, you've exceeded your number of watches. So, Drafthouse Films, for the love of God, just use Vimeo.
Oh, yeah.
Damn. I don't know. This is inside baseball. So, anyway, I will, however, say, as a way of giving whatever opinion I can, I would have watched this the whole way through had it not been a problem. Had I not been actually physically stopped from watching it the whole way through, because I'm a professional, and I'm willing to give everything a chance. But I was not that upset when it stopped.
Yeah.
So,
I can see that.
Take that for what it is. Again, my completely uninformed opinion. There have been plenty of movies that I've thought I should walk out of this and then watch the way to the end. And I was actually pleasantly surprised. I can't say whether or not The Tribe is one of them. I do intend, now that I've gotten a new link, I do intend on watching it. And maybe I'll like give my thoughts and opinions on finishing it next week. But yeah.
Nick, I
didn't do it. So yeah,
up to you and me,
Nick Cannon and Amanda Waltz. You will be carrying us. I will be asking questions to help facilitate the discussion.
We're gonna tag team the shit out of this podcast.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oof. All
right. So who wants to go first?
Well, I'll go first.
All right.
Just go first, Nick.
Get going. Funny because I think that the first 40 minutes are when I like this movie most. And there comes a point where basically the film, I think, becomes a bit enamored with its own conceit and everything that can entail, which is sometimes okay. There are a lot of films I like, even a few films I love, that you could say that about, rightfully so. But in this instance, after a while, started to realize that the movie kind of required no effort and no work, really. That a lot of it was just sort of presented, and it didn't really ask me to put much thought into progression of narrative, because it's not really a narrative-heavy film, and it actually makes concessions that will allow you to follow it in pretty much every regard possible. Mm-hmm. There are a few things that aren't entirely clear, but such is the case. There are plenty of dialogue heavy films that were, that is the case, so whatever. And after a while, I just felt like I was sort of watching the same scene over and over. I mean, I don't know how many times the main character can be snuck up on and beaten up and have his wallet taken from him, and how many times somebody can walk down a hallway without it starting to feel as if I'm just sort of watching these isolated gestures and isolated incidents. And then there was a kind of a turning point in this movie for me, for the worst, which I don't know if I should say exactly what it is, but it is something that initially you wonder, you kind of think it's maybe one thing, and then you realize it's another, and it relies almost entirely on a character screaming in pain.
And I know what that is.
Yes, you do. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I felt that the movie was starting to go for a certain kind of shock value that I find extremely distasteful, and to me is always a sign of bad faith. And then that was confirmed in the movie's final scene, which is basically this... it amazes me that in 2015, we still have people who are smart enough to make movies and not smart enough to realize that the austere, long-take-heavy drama that concludes with a quote-unquote shocking moment of violence isn't a completely tired thing by this point.
You mean the Jean Dielman thing.
The Jean Dielman thing.
Spoilers
which,
for Jean Dielman, I guess.
Yes, which Chantal Ackerman, at age 25, perfected 40 years ago. we're still doing this. And Jean Dielman is one of the, say, 20 greatest films ever made. The Tribe doesn't have to be, and it certainly isn't. But if it is going to approach that sort of thing, it has to show an understanding that this kind of thing has been done before. And it has to do something new with it. And it doesn't show evidence of either. And so, overall, I did not care for the movie really very much, which I actually feel a bit bad saying. As negative as I'm coming across, there are things in this movie I admired a lot. There is an intelligence in some of the editing of the film, some of the points where it decides to cut, and how it decides to cut. And I think that... The way that it draws you in is very impressive, considering that this might sound difficult on paper, a 2-hour, 12-minute film that features no dialogue whatsoever, just gestures. But along with the fact that if you've seen enough silent films, you're sort of accustomed to it by this point, regardless of that, I think that the way that it is able to basically keep you the royal you, you being me, engaged enough throughout without feeling a bit antsy. You know, there's something to be said for that. So, overall, I would say that I was, not a fan of this motion picture, but I do think that it is worth discussing and worth considering, if only because it is something that, A, has not really been done before, at least I have not seen before and I cannot recall ever hearing about, and B, it does it without making it feel like a total gimmick. So, kind of a complicated reaction, ultimately negative, but... with a few things to parse.
Yeah, because we should say that, I mean, this film, at least as much as I saw of it, the style is, as Nick Newman said, an austere long takes. Mm-hmm. Like a 7-minute opening scene of a guy trying to get directions at a bus stop, filmed from across the street with all the cars swooping back and forth and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, very static.
Yeah. Some tracking shots.
Oh, miles of tracking shots.
Yeah.
Miles upon miles. To the point where I was watching a video of the director talking about the film, and he said that they actually had to use a little car to film a lot of the tracking shots, which I wasn't sure what he meant by that. I didn't know if he meant like an automatic, if it was just an electric...
Like a Tyco, you know, remote-controlled car.
Yeah, if it was an actual little car. Somebody comes in.
Golf cart?
Maybe a golf cart, when I was like...
like a smart car.
Like a smart
maybe
car.
Like a Honda maybe. Fit.
Yeah, just to drive around filming these kids, because there are so many tracking shots. Anyway, but yeah.
Right, like we follow him up an entire staircase to a door... where he's then told he has to walk around a building, and then the camera stays at the door and observes like a ceremony of some kind that's going on. And mm-hmm. then the ceremony's over and we see everyone come inside, and like we watch every single person walk through the door, and then they all leave, and then finally he's like back in frame because he's finally walked around the building.
What was the film that was made not too long ago? Oh, I can't remember who directed it. It was the one it's a very realistic portrait of what post-apocalyptic world would look like, and there's a lot of super long takes of
After Earth.
Are you thinking of I always get this in the Bergman movie mixed up, Time of the Wolf by Haneke?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
That reminded me of that a bit.
I like that one though.
yeah, that's
it's yeah.
This
yeah.
movie did strike me again. The 45 minutes that I saw, a lot like a person who'd seen Haneke, or Haneke, or whatever you want to say, and had just been like, "Oh, I can do that," but then didn't realize precisely what one had to do in order to really sell that.
Mm-hmm. Also, I find it odd in a deaf school that they would have a little girl ringing a bell to finish off the ceremony. Sorry. Why?
Because it's, I don't know, because that's a thing that they do.
I thought that was, yeah, anyway.
Where are the security guards in this? If there was one security guard who could hear, this
you
movie would
think...
be 36 minutes long.
Yeah, exactly.
You would think that there should be someone at this school for the deaf that can hear. Because I'm not saying, like, that deaf people are impotent or, you know, incapable of taking care of themselves, but... Yeah, a lot of this movie is a lot of this movie's dependent on, like, they can't hear us.
They're teens.
Right.
So, I mean, you would expect even if it was a school for students who can hear perfectly well, that they would still have security guards, that they would still have people, because teens are up to some stuff, let me tell you.
They always are.
Yeah, especially in the Ukraine, where apparently there are roving bands of deaf teens terrorizing shoppers heading to their vehicles.
This movie did really sell, you know, just like Jaws with sharks, this movie made me fear the deaf. And that's only the 45 minutes I saw. I'm going to keep saying that because invariably...
We're going to anger all of our deaf listeners.
Oh, God, Amanda.
No. I'm so sorry.
You can say... The great thing about deaf people is that you can say anything you want about them and they're not going to bother...
They can read lips.
Yeah. Well, no. Like, you can just cover your mouth. Or I could say it on here.
I could say
I hate the deaf. I hate them. You should put them in camps. And they're not gonna hear me.
My girlfriend actually said that one thing about the deaf is that they can't whisper. So, like, if you've got a snarky comment to say and you want to say it that someone can hear it, you got to say it so that everyone could possibly see it, you know?
See, that's a good principle. I like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't really feel that deaf people should be put in camps, so let's clarify that.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway.
Speaking of putting in camps, like, this is a weird question. Did they ever explain why this place looked like an abandoned steel mill?
Yes. That, well,
because
it
was
like,
shot in the Ukraine.
It looked
Jesus.
Like...
So have Nick ever... Newman has insulted both the deaf and people from the Ukraine.
I actually, aesthetically, I liked this movie. I mean, it kind of reminds me of something like, you know, the Romanian New Wave or something, which I tend to enjoy watching because I like that design. I actually find it very comforting in a way. I'm saying that it looks like... I'm saying that what you imagine the Ukraine looks like.
Nick Newman, comforted by squalor. Utter squalor. Well, it actually reminded me of, in the 1980s, whenever they wanted to depict an urban high school, it was always covered in graffiti, and right. Which was not how it actually... It's like PS-190, and it would just be covered in graffiti, and there would just be debris everywhere.
Yeah, like giant graffiti murals across the lockers.
Across the lockers. Like, what was that one movie, 3 o'clock High? That's kind of what it reminded me of, which I kind of liked it for that reason, because it reminded me a lot of the movies I watched when I was a kid, where I just imagined that urban teens all had brass knuckles and were terrorizing one another. So, yeah, I kind of liked it for that reason.
Okay.
Actually, I should probably do my...
Yeah, what I was about to say, saying that you liked it for that reason, why don't we see what else you felt about this film?
Yeah, so I actually agree with you wholeheartedly, Nick, about this film. It did start out very promising, and you were left wondering where it could possibly go and whether or not you were going to be able to follow the narrative. I think just watching it, I felt, this is going to sound very strange, I felt very excited watching it. I felt very stimulated watching it. And I was thinking why that was, because not a lot is really happening in the film. Like I said, there's a lot of very long takes where people are just walking and going to meet up with the rest of their gang. And I realize it's because I felt like a cat because when you're watching, I was very much aware of my eyes darting from everybody's hands to see what was going on, and from everybody's faces to see what was going on. And I realized it was almost like a cat watching if someone set their laptop down and had something going on their laptop, and the cat got very entranced by it. And I think it taps into this primal thing in humans where you're looking for facial cues and you're looking for movement, because there's this sensory deprivation of you don't have someone telling you what's going on. So it's so visual. It's such an incredibly visual film, of course, in a way that is so different from the way other films are visual. And I really actually went into this film thinking I was going to absolutely hate it. I thought it sounded like pretentious art house, like European art house nonsense. And I really enjoyed it for the most part. I would say the first half of the film, I was entranced. I was completely riveted to everything that was going on. But then, like you said, Nick, it does become very exploitive. I think one of the reviews I read actually compared it to the sort of hygiene films, the Prohibition era hygiene films.
Where
it's very cautionary, like, this is what's going to happen to you if you're not careful. And
Marty's a good egg, but then he met Vanessa.
Yeah.
It's about town. And now he has chlamydia.
Kind of does.
Don't be a Marty. Yeah, that kind of thing.
But
tune into my new podcast. Brian puts on a 1920s radio voice.
Can we all just talk like that for the rest of the...
I'm down with it.
But it does rely on a certain level of social intelligence that is not required for films, basically. And I mean, a lot of people are comparing it to silent films where you have these big gestures and big facial expressions. And it sort of verges on hammy a lot of times. And there's definitely... I actually, in high school, had classes with a girl who was deaf, and she attended all of our classes. She had an interpreter who came with her, and we had a film class together, and she made a short film where she was basically showing that even when you can't speak, your personality comes out through sign. And she made this short film showing two of her friends who had very distinct personalities. And one was telling, there's this very excitable hyper girl telling her more laid back friend a story about how she tried to flush a hoagie down the toilet. And which is weird that I still remember that, but you could see from the way she signed, she was very energetic and her hands were going everywhere. And the other girl was much more subdued and sort of, you know, just saying, oh, you know, that's a really weird story. And just watching this film, I kept thinking back on that, about how you could see the personalities in each of these characters, even in a way that they become sort of archetypes. Like, there's definitely the guy that first, who first recruits Sergei, who's the main character. And he's sort of I almost want to call him a Joe Pesci type character, because he's definitely the joker. And he's always, I think he pushes him into the girls' room at one point, and you can tell he's kind of like the fast talker, literally, because he's a very fast signer. And then there's
the guy who was standing up in the classroom.
No, he had the more like curly hair.
I'll be completely honest. I couldn't tell anyone.
They all looked very similar.
Very Eastern European.
They all did. So
I'm surprised that you knew a name.
So, well, it's only because I read it in a review. Oh, so okay. To be fair,
because I'm looking at IMDb and I don't even see any names.
Yeah, there's no, I mean, there's names, but it's not, there's no pictures, because these are non-professional actors, so they don't have any headshots.
I'm looking at the cast listing and it's just,
yeah,
cast names.
Yeah, exactly. So it's impossible to know any of their names, and which makes it gets to a point where it is, I think that's another reason why this film is kind of exciting in a way, because it's just so anthropological, and you're just, as the title suggests, because you're watching these people who do have very sort of strange customs, and it's very, you're sort of immersed in this world of theirs where you don't know what's going on, and you have to just guess as to, you know, and you basically, it's kind of like when you watch it's kind of like, what's that meerkat show where they give all the meerkats different names? to sort of distinguish
that. Like Meerkat Mansion or something?
Meerkat Mansion, where it's basically like, oh, blonde girl said to muscle guy something. You know,
yeah,
it's,
those meerkats had weird names.
Yeah, it was always like Queen Sophia and stuff like that.
It was Meerkat Manor.
Meerkat Manor, yeah.
You know, I had an English professor in college who wrote for that show.
How do you write for Meerkat Manor? I guess you would have to.
Yeah.
I guess you would. Yeah, you have to write the scenarios. But anyway, but yeah, toward the middle of the film, the, as you pointed out, Nick, the concept does sort of wear thin, where you sort of are getting, you're not as enchanted by the novelty of watching these deaf students communicate with each other. You actually do need a story to unfold, and the story that does unfold is very unsavory and cheap in a lot of ways. And I do think that that is because they had to amp up the shock in order for you to know what is actually going on. Because if it was just a simple story about boy meets girl and girl is leaving the country and, you know, he's sad about that, it wouldn't be as exciting. It would be very difficult to just translate what's going on in terms of how one character is feeling. And especially because Sergei, the main character, is very stoic. I mean, his facial expressions are basically just the one note. Like, he really doesn't, unlike a lot of the characters who you can definitely see how distressed they are in their facial expressions, and you can see how what's going on. And, you know, I just think that the filmmaker didn't trust the audience enough to just give them a story that wasn't reliant on sort of the shock and exploitation. And that was very disappointing, because honestly, I think, you know, I think the film does work on a lot of levels, and by the end I really was very disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
So does the use of, I don't want to say the use of deaf people, but is the conceit ever paid off in any way?
Using deaf people in a movie?
Like, having them all be deaf and not having any translations? Like, is there ever a point where that kind of snaps into being, like, is there a reason for it? Is it just a cheap gimmick?
There's only one scene where it, I mean, other than sort of the, other than sort of the opportunity it creates to build in a certain ambiguity while also a certain familiarity, where you can sort of recognize customs and gestures and these mm-hmm. things that are sort of universal, that quote unquote transcend language. The use of that is definitely of some interest, but I think really the scene where the fact that you do not always know what process is being undergone is the sort of big moment in the movie, the big reveal. And that sort of, you know, it's troubling because it indicates a very deep cynicism mm-hmm. that I just kind of can't get on board with, that I think the movie should be better than. So it's weird, because there are points where it feels intelligent enough to justify it. At other points, I look at it and I think, yeah, the movie should maybe be.
But if it was a conventionally shot and staged film
mm-hmm.
with just speaking actors, it wouldn't be nearly as interesting. It just wouldn't. It would just be another crime drama. Well, not crime drama, but it would just be another sort of hard to watch drama.
Mm-hmm.
Like kids.
Yeah, like kids, exactly. It's very much like I've read people who've compared it to kids. Which I actually read a very damning review on RogerEbert.com. I think they only gave it like 1.5 stars.
Oh, yeah, I think I read that same review.
Oof. Yeah, they were rough on it.
They did not like it.
But
I mean, I guess because the question is, like, movies can have a gimmick to them. You know, a definite way that you can go about that is something like Memento, which is told backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a means of getting both into the character's head and kind of, you know, just messing with expectation and everything. And I think that that works, and that the movie would work even if it was told chronologically, as long as you were able to keep reminding yourself that the guy would forget things, but that the gimmick helps to sell the story from the character's point of view and put you in his headspace. I don't know, having not seen this movie in its entirety, if that would ever become a thing that I would say about this film.
Yeah, I mean, it is very... Like I said, the main character, you really can't tell what's going on in his head. And obviously there's no background on any of these characters. You don't know why they're there. You don't know if, you know, I think that's one of the biggest problems, is that it's really hard to see this film past a very superficial level. And, you know, it's, I don't know. Yeah, and there's like shocking moments in this that I think do play on the fact that that being deaf is sort of putting themselves in danger. Like the I'm speaking specifically to the scene where they go to the truck yard and the one kid can't hear the truck beeping as it's backing up, and that to me was insane. I just don't... If you're deaf, you probably shouldn't go into a life of crime. It's probably not a good idea.
Very like, true. Speaking of things like that, should we get into spoilers? Because we've kind of danced around, to some degree, what exactly this movie is about.
Yeah. Yeah, we might as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, the tribe, it exists... Would you recommend people see this? I can't say, because I haven't seen it in its entirety.
I would.
It's 2 hours and 12 minutes long.
It's 2 hours and 12 minutes long, yeah.
Let's make that point.
Yes.
I mean, you know, it's not like that bad, you know, a duration. Like, it's the movie. I think the movie will hold you enough, but the way I feel is that... But again, I brought up something like Jean Dielman, which is actually much longer. It's like 3 hours and 25 minutes. But
oh wow!
I also feel like, you know, maybe there. It's just this reminds me of so many better films, and I would just maybe, if someone said, you know, should I see The Tribe? I'd say, well, you could, or you could watch this. Like, you know, I sort of have this feeling of when there are movies like it that are better out there, you should see those first. Just sort of almost by default. So, yeah, you know, maybe.
Yeah.
It's difficult to speak. Even though I know I didn't like this movie, it's difficult to speak about it in any certain terms. Because it has those things that do stand out, that do make it worth considering. But I keep coming back to just my revulsion at certain sequences and how I feel they were. Actually very exploitative, so...
Yeah, because like, as I was watching this film, all I could keep thinking was, I could be watching something like Caché or Time of the Wolf.
Mm.
And that... Because I guess I wanted to, like, reprove my cred to myself. I was like, man, why do I find this so dull and uninteresting? And then it was kind of like, okay, I might not like this, but I could totally watch some Michael Haneke right now. Like, show me the White Ribbon and I'll be cool. let's get into spoilers. So spoilers for this film. There's like a crime syndicate in this place.
So it opens on Sergei, the main character, and he's the new kid in school. So he gets recruited by the school, like you said, crime syndicate.
Yeah.
Who are forcing two of the female students into prostitution.
So they at some point make it clear that the girls are being forced.
I guess, yeah. Well, I wouldn't say... Well, I don't think they have much of a choice, because it seems like these girls... I think if you're... Oh, God, I'm going to make a pretty big assumption. I'm thinking if you're a deaf woman in Ukraine, there's not a lot of opportunities for you.
Oh, God.
I'm just saying.
Damn.
So you begin to understand from, and there's a man who works with them, an older man who seems like he works for the school, who is getting them passports to Italy. So
just the girls?
Just the girls. And because there's a scene where there's a very, very, very long scene where he and the groundskeeper, who I assume he's the groundskeeper, who has been driving the girls to the truck yard to have sex with truckers. They're meeting and he's showing him pictures of his trip to Italy and he has all this Italian food and Italian wine and things like that. And then the two girls come in and one of them sits on his lap. And so you realize, oh, he's in on it too. And then he gives him these Italian like souvenir t-shirts. And then there's a bunch of scenes after that where they go to the passport office and he's getting them their passports. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty easy to understand. But then Sergei doesn't want the one girl to leave because they've been having sex and he's fallen in love with her. And he gets in trouble at one point because he's trying to prevent her from going to the truck yard to prostitute herself. Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't say they're forced into it. Yeah, you miss a lot, Brian.
I did. I'm looking forward to this now. Not really.
But yeah, it's. I wouldn't say that they are necessarily forced. But it is pretty clear that they think they have no other way out.
So is this like a state-run school for the deaf?
I would think.
Because like, if it is, like, why wasn't protagonist in it previously? Like, why is he new?
That's a good question.
Because I thought it was like a boarding school for like rich deaf kids.
Well, because half of me wondered if it was for troubled deaf students.
That could
but
be it.
Maybe. Because
like I don't know. I went to elementary school and there were deaf kids in class with us.
Yeah.
They went up through high school with us. So like I don't know. I'm sure there are schools for the deaf out there. But I couldn't wrap my head around even how it existed, or as I had to clarify, like why the girls were prostituting themselves, if it was like a threat of violence, if they felt they had no other option, or if they, you know, if they were just doing it for fun. Which I know is a fucked up thing to say, but
I don't think it's, because it is like, again, you don't know, they don't communicate why they're doing it in a way that we would understand.
If I could read sign language, I don't speak Ukrainian, so.
Well, yeah, and apparently Ukrainian sign language is different from American sign language, so, yeah. Which actually, it was strange when I was watching this film, and especially the way it depicts sex. It made me think about when I was studying Russian film, and one of the things my Russian film professor said is, because Russia is such a macho culture, women don't necessarily have sex as much as they submit.
I was expecting that to be like a much more R-rated sentence.
No, well, I mean, it's disturbing.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Which, considering that, I feel like this film definitely depicted sex in that way, where it's very much this macho culture where the girls just sort of accept, well, this is the way it is.
Right.
You know, if people are going to have sex with us anyway, we might as well get paid for it. Which is a very, you
it's
know,
bleak as shit.
It's very, 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 very bleak. And I honestly wondered, even though obviously this wasn't something that we could possibly know, if maybe they were going to Italy to continue prostituting.
I assumed that's what you meant when you were talking about it.
Well, I mean, it was you
like an Eastern Promises type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we talk about abortion a bit now?
Oh,
yeah,
please.
Bro.
Is that something that happened?
Okay, so this is the scene I've referred to multiple times now.
Yeah.
So what happens is this girl goes to a woman's apartment, and obviously it's dialogue free, and she walks in, and eventually she's put on
it. This woman is also deaf?
No.
I guess.
But for some reason, the woman doesn't speak at all.
Yeah, there are parts of this movie where you're wondering who is deaf and who is not. But anyway, point being, nobody's speaking. She's put on this very rudimentary designed system, but it's basically she's just sitting on a table
She's sitting on like a cutting board over a sink, basically.
A cutting board over a sink, and she has her pants pulled down, her underwear pulled down. She's lying, her legs are spread open, and her feet are tied. Not tied, her legs are held up, they're suspended by rope tied to the wall.
That go around her neck.
Yes.
I think it just goes over her neck.
And I assume that this was a gynecology scene at first, which... Because I honestly, that's what I thought. And I was, granted, I don't know virtually anything about how gynecology works, but that's what I assumed. Because
no,
I guess
please.
I just have a very, you know, pure worldview or something. And then it turns out eventually, after, I don't know, 2 minutes, I realized she was having an abortion, mostly because she started wincing in pain. And again, this is, I still thought it was a gynecology segment while she was wincing in pain.
I will say from experience, Nick, you sort of wince in pain when you go to the gynecologist.
Okay.
If you've ever had
that's
a pap smear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pap smears
are not. You're going to feel some pressure. You're going to feel some scraping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do love the word pap smear, though.
Pap smear.
Smear
you
the paps.
I feel like you have to say it pap smear, which I don't
pap
understand.
Smear?
Well, that's the
what
guy
you put on a bagel.
Foo Fighters.
Hmm. Okay.
I've only ever heard the term schmear when it's like someone asking, someone in New York, I should say, asking for something to put on their bagel.
Anyway.
So the fact that you've applied that somehow to gynecology is terrifying to me.
Now, anyway. I like to think I have a resilience for these sorts of things, but I found the scene so distinctly unpleasant that I muted my computer and I just kind of looked away from my screen for 90 seconds. And I just felt as if the movie was kind of... sort of, you know, poking a stick in my neck or something, and it was trying to aggravate me in a way, because the fact that this person can't speak and that there's sort of the surprise element makes it feel, again, it makes it feel kind of exploitative. Even if she's not actually having an abortion, even if it is just actors who are pretending to carry this out, you know, it's still a sequence that requires her to be in an uncomfortable state. And I don't want to sound too much like Roger Ebert reviewing Blue Velvet here, exactly, when, you know, he accuses David Lynch of basically abusing Isabella Rossellini because she had to be naked, which is like a stupid review anyway. But my point being, I don't want to sound too much like that, just to say that it was one of those moments where I felt the filmmaker was working in bad faith. And just at various points, there's a scene later on towards the climax where a character is being drowned and they can't scream, and it kind of focuses on that. It focuses on the sound of the water splashing.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me just felt, it felt like it was being done in bad faith. And not only that, but there's also, there are just other things that are sort of less immediately shocking, or rather less immediately brutal, such as these sex scenes. I mean, this is a movie that goes from a quiet moment to a hard cut to two characters engaged in a 69 sex act. And I'm thinking,
very long 69
sex
act.
And I'm thinking to myself, okay,
I missed a lot.
this is what an overambitious, angry 16-year-old would make, basically. This is what it feels like that. It feels like the film student who saw, you know, two European movies 4 months ago, and then suddenly they think that they're a master of cinema.
Right. Again, like I said, someone who like watched Michael Haneke and was like, oh, that's all I have to do?
Yeah. It's basically, this is kind of how I feel, not as strongly, but it's how I feel about the borderline people. I like Martha Marcy May Marlene, and I like After School, but I really don't like Simon Killer. And those movies feel, again, this is the term I keep coming to, bad faith. They feel like they're being made more for the purpose of shocking somebody than for expressing something specific.
Well, not so much
Martha Marcy. That's not fair. But the Antonio Campos movies, I think, there's something going on there that makes me very uncomfortable.
I haven't
seen After
School, but I have seen Simon Killer, and I enjoyed Simon Killer, you know, to an extent, as it can be enjoyed.
Yeah.
But
right.
Maybe that was just because I love Brady so much.
Oh, Brady.
I was surprised Brady wasn't in this movie.
Where's Brady?
Obscure, prestigious, crazy, foreign film. Brady wasn't in it? Come on.
He's like, I gotta work with Slabosh Pitsky.
Just
gotta get in there.
Just comes in for like 3 minutes as like a cab driver. Where are you going? What's wrong? Can't you talk? Oh, okay. And then he's just gone.
Well, it does. It does feel like it's like, this is the way things are, man. Look at it. I'm going to rip your face in it.
If someone were to come out tomorrow and say, this is based on a true story, this happened, maybe I would feel better about it.
Even if it was, though, it's how you express it.
Right.
It's
I'm not saying I'd feel positive about it. I'm just saying I'd feel better.
I think I've seen enough movies that are based on true stories that still feel like they're, like they sort of have this bad attitude to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where it's just kind of, regardless of anything else, it just comes down to how it is deciding to get its point across, what point it even has to begin with.
And I think it's also because it is this art house European film, people approach it in a different way than they would maybe a genre film. But if I were to show you a scene from a horror movie of a woman getting stabbed in the vagina, you would say, oh, that's disgusting. Why did you show that to me? Mm-hmm. But this woman is getting sharp metal instruments shoved up her vagina for a good, I would say, I have no idea. I would say it's at least 5 minutes.
Jesus.
At least. And I mean, it is extremely just, I don't want to say unnecessary, but I just kept saying, okay, come on, man. This is just ridiculous. I mean, it's because especially she is the character. I don't know how old she really is in real life. I mean, I hope to God that she's over a certain age because she's supposed to be playing a 15, 16 year old girl. And so when you're watching a person who does look very much like she could be a 15, 16 year old girl going through that level of torture, and it does feel very torture porny to a degree. And that's what really got to me. And just the, I don't know, just the sheer length of that scene is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That and then, you know, the movie ends with a very brutal act of violence. It actually ends with a couple, but specifically the fact that it's the final scene, that's the button on the movie, is just...
What is the button?
So this kid is constantly bullied by this gang of thugs who also go to the school, and so what he does is he sneaks into the area where they're sleeping at night, and he takes their, he raises, these little dressers that they have and smashes their skulls with them. And it's four
kids.
Because
they can't hear him.
Yeah, they can't hear him, so he can do that while they're sleeping. And it's all done in one shot from when he enters he goes up a stairwell, he enters this hallway, he goes into one room with two kids, he goes into another room with two kids, he walks out, he goes to the entrance, closes the door behind him, you hear the door lock as it's closed, and it's just this, you know, it's not, of course it's not a fade out either, of course it's that hard cut, of course it's someone saying, boom, cinema, this is how it ends. You know, more filmmakers really need to use, even really great ones need to use the fade out more. That's just an observation that I'm making.
I love a good fade out.
Even a freeze frame has some, like, has a bit more, anyway.
There's also something musical about it, too.
Yeah, and the tyranny.
You don't tyranny like one of those, whiteouts?
Of the hard cut. Whiteout could work, I guess. You know.
I was thinking, actually, while watching the 45 minutes of this movie that I watched, about blindness. The movie Blindness.
Oh, I was going to say, not the, okay, not the condition.
And I was thinking about, no, not the condition. I was thinking about how that movie, again, based on the 45 minutes of this movie that I saw, that movie did a better job of placing me in the mindset of a blind person than this movie did of placing me in the mindset of a deaf person.
Right, because it feels very, you're observing.
Right.
That's it.
So, like, that, even that was, like, removed. So, I kept asking the question, why?
And it's
I'm
just
not hearing a lot of any reason why.
At one, I feel like it so wants you to be an active participant and an active viewer in trying to figure out what is going on and what the motivation is for these students to basically do what they're doing, but it also doesn't demand that of you at the same time because the story is so simplistic.
Right.
So it's a really conflicted film. It just is.
I'd love to share, actually, the opening paragraph of the review that's on RogerEbert.com.
Oh, yes,
that
please.
That you brought up earlier.
Oh, yes.
This is written by...
1.5 stars, everybody.
Scout Tafoya? I'm sorry that I butchered that.
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah. Oh, really?
He's a good dude. Yeah, no,
I know
him. Well,
yeah.
Well,
adorable.
This is pretty good. I love
He's an adorable guy, too.
Aww.
And I bet his parents are happy they named him Scout and not Atticus, because as we all know, Atticus Finch is a racist now.
Yeah.
So this is a great opening paragraph, just because of everywhere that it goes. And it begins. Recall, cinephiles, the end of 1997 Jennifer Lopez vehicle Anaconda. After John Voight axes himself to death, documentarian Lopez and her cameraman Ice Cube finally discover the lost tribe they'd gone to the Amazon to film in the first place before running afoul of physics-defying reptiles. Now imagine that after the credits roll, Ice and J-Lo decide that the best thing to do with their camera, now that they'd located this mythic people, whose ancient ways of life will be totally alien to Western civilization, was to make them act in a remake of Larry Clark's youthsploitation headache Kids. A little self-defeating, right? You can imagine my frustration then when I realized about 20 minutes into Miroslav Slabopitsky's The Tribe that this was more or less what I was being shown.
That is one of the best intros to a movie review I've read in a long time.
Any movie review that begins by referencing and walking you through the plot of Anaconda is amazing.
So fantastic.
Good work, Scout. Tell him I said that.
All right.
Good.
Bam.
Yeah, and then the review goes on to just completely
annihilates
this movie.
Oh man, he was not merciful.
No, and I mean, from what I saw, there didn't seem to be a reason to be. And like I said, I'll go back, I'll watch this movie, I'll formulate my own opinion. But everything that you people have heard or told me thus far, good Lord, I can't. I mean, Nick, if you didn't like this, let's be real. Your pretentious art house bullshit, your tolerance is usually a lot higher than mine.
I don't think it's higher. I think it's at a different, working on a different metric, rather. I think that when I see something like this that is not, because I've seen a lot of stuff like this, when I see something that resembles it but doesn't really speak the language, then I kind of, you know, then that's the point where I go, all right.
Yeah, when it's like artifice.
You're on notice, Miroslav.
Oh, Miroslav.
Would we watch another Miroslav Slabopitsky movie?
I really want to know what next, like if he'll do a film with like blind people, maybe people who have, I don't know.
Like, fibromyalgia.
Fibromyalgia. What's the next affliction?
With rickets.
Rickets? Ooh. I bet you a lot of people have rickets on your Ukraine. No.
Oh.
Damn.
Jesus.
A lot of scurvy. They don't get enough lemons.
Those poor people.
What's the one like rickets that's kind of a weird one?
Shingles,
that's it. That's an actual thing, though. I was at a... You know, recently, within the past few months, I had to take a friend of mine to pick up a prescription at Rite Aid, and I made a joke. So you think I can get my shingles medication here? So thinking, you know, because... That's not a thing people have. And then there was a sign there that said, get your shingles vaccine.
Oh, no. If you have the chickenpox virus, you already have it. The shingles.
I was going to say scurvy. Like, that's the one that it feels like we've taken care of.
Oh, yeah.
You just need, like,
well, I hope so.
Sunlight and fruit.
Vitamin C.
Yeah.
Well, can I just say, speaking of things that may give you diseases, that toilet in the girl's bathroom in this movie, what like is that what toilets in Ukraine look like?
Yeah, I don't know.
A hole that you basically squat over.
What? Oh,
yeah.
Actually, yeah, I've heard about that.
There is a scene where she's taking a pregnancy test, and when she first started unwrapping, I was like, if that is a tampon, if you were putting a tampon in, I am done. I'm done with this movie. That is so ridiculous. I don't want to watch a woman putting her tampon on her cooch. Like, sorry. This is so, just so unnecessary. But yeah, so she's giving herself a pregnancy test, and she basically, the toilets are on these raised brick stalls that are separated. Which, why are they even separated? They don't have doors. They don't have anything. It might as well be a trough. But they have these wood separators, and it's just, they're porcelain, but you basically just squat over them. They're just these squat holes.
I swear to God that this is something I actually saw not too long ago. It was on, I'm pretty sure it was on cracked.com, which, yes, is a humor website, but they actually have, like, real stuff on there.
I do some Cracked. I do.
Right. But I swear to God that they had something about how, like, different places use weird stuff, and one of them was about toilets, and it was about how, like, people do still use toilets that you have to squat over.
Oh, why?
Like that. I don't
she doesn't
know.
She doesn't wipe after she pees. She just gets up and pulls up her panties, and I'm like, why?
Okay, well, that's a whole different thing. God, that I don't why? Know how to tell you.
Oh, there's no toilet paper. Is there no toilet paper in this deaf school? Why? What is wrong? I feel like this isn't real. This is how things actually are. This is a nightmare world. Like, why? And also, it's like, girl, of course you're pregnant. Of course you're pregnant, girl. Don't take a pregnancy test. Like, you are having unprotected sex with everyone. Oh, this movie. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. Okay, here, I found it, if you can believe that. It's the Cracked article. What is it called?
Did you just Google Cracked article toilet Ukraine?
I did Cracked article toilet and squat. Five weird truths of cleaning porta-johns. Number four is different cultures have different ways of shitting. I shit you not. I've traveled a lot when I was young, and in much of the world...
Are we really spending time on this?
I'm just going to say to...
Hey, man, we might as well. We have time.
They still have squat toilets instead of Western-style toilets. So, yes, it's literally just a porcelain or tile hole in the floor. I don't know. That's just the world, okay?
I don't understand. Don't they have toilet paper? Do they still have to get in lines for toilet paper? The Cold War is over.
So, Nick, any final thoughts on this movie?
More fun than
shitting in a hole in the ground.
I feel like the more I discuss it, it's kind of this thing where I feel as if I could really kind of go either way on certain sections of this movie, and yet overall I know I do not like it, which I think is a sign that, even if that's not necessarily the intention of our friend Miroslav, I do think that at the same time, it is a sign of a creative mind at work, sign that
it's
very
ambitious.
It is ambitious.
Yeah,
it's if a movie can conflict you that much and still make you interrogate your own opinion, then it's not a complete failure.
Well, if you're watching it purely for the novelty of it, it is incredibly interesting to watch for the most part, and there are things that you pick up on that you almost feel sort of triumphant that you figured out. I think there's a scene where a teacher, there's only one scene also of these kids in class. So I don't know
what they're doing
with their day. Yeah. Well, you saw it. Yeah. Where they're in class. And the one, you can tell the one kid is a class clown.
You tell if he was a class clown or he was like a dick.
Well, don't those go hand in hand?
No, like there's a difference between a kid being like, you know, you're gay. No, you're a gay. And, like, a kid being like, you know, fuck this class, I hate you all. Yeah.
So there's a scene, actually, where the teacher is distracted by this one student, and she's obviously disciplining him. And then she looks over, and she has this look on her face, and she does a sign where you realize that she has lost her train of thought. And she's actually, it's very apparent that she's signing, oh, where was I? And it's so interesting that, you know, anyone can pick up on that just based on her facial expression. So there are redeeming aspects of this film. It is just, you know, I would say you could probably fast forward through quite a few bits.
all the walking.
Actually, I kind of like the walking.
Okay, well,
I don't know.
Okay, so that's it for The Tribe. Out in limited release now. I will try to see this by the time we record our next episode so that I can give my brief two cents. I'd also like to say, my professor, Michael Olmert, who wrote for Meerkat Manor, looked him up. He has won 3 primetime Emmys.
Wow.
I had no idea.
For Meerkat Manor?
No, not for Meerkat Manor. Speaking of things you can watch on your TV, let's talk really briefly about what's coming to Blu-ray, and then we will be done.
Do you want to, I feel like if we spend time with the Ukrainian toilets, can we throw out a little recommendation for something we watched?
Yeah, you know what? Oh, actually, there's like nothing good coming to Blu-ray. So
oh, yeah, that
just...
as well.
What kind of toilets do you like, Nick?
Yeah, what's the toilet you're recommending?
Anyway, go ahead, sweetie.
recommendation?
Yeah.
All right.
So I've decided that I'm going to break tradition and for the first time ever recommend something that is not a film.
Ooh.
What the shit does that even mean?
But I've decided that this is an okay choice for 3 reasons. One is that it's on Netflix, so you can watch it right. I mean, if you have a Netflix subscription, which is probably most people who listen to this, you can watch it right now.
I would hope so.
It is from filmmakers, people who traditionally work in the film field. Okay. And three, I think it's fucking great. Okay. I am referring to Sense8, which is...
Oh, God.
Yes.
I already regret allowing you to do this.
Which is the new show from Andy and Lana Wachowski, as well as J. Michael Straczynski, the creator of Babylon 5. Also the screenwriter of Clint Eastwood's Changeling, which is a very weird credit. But anyway, the show is about 8 strangers from around the world who discover that they're all connected. And basically, I won't bother too much with the premise, but basically they can jump into each other's lives and experience the things they're experiencing physically,
so it's like
emotionally.
The movie that Joss Whedon wrote, In Your Eyes?
Yeah, okay, I haven't seen that, but...
Oh, it was pretty good.
Okay.
Zoe Kazan.
I think that this is like... Granted, I don't watch a lot of TV, and I haven't seen a lot of these sort of like golden age of TV shows. I've seen one season of Breaking Bad. I've never seen The Nick. You know, really the only show from that time I've seen is Mad Men. But this is probably... Based on the first season, my favorite TV show since Arrested Development or The Sopranos.
Wow.
Yeah,
I've heard nothing but bad things about this fucking series.
I'm shocked that you
everybody I know loves this show. Like, this is
crazy.
Yeah, but you're a weird guy.
But everybody I know, very, very intelligent people who normally wouldn't go for something this high concept and out there, or rather wouldn't go for, you know, something that has this kind of tenor to it, are really taken by it. The show is just insanely compelling because it's a really high concept idea that is rooted almost entirely in basic drama of people's lives and the basic everyday problems they're going through. And the way that it opens up all of these possibilities, like the Wachowskis' best work, what it does is it takes these very sort of didactic and simplistic bases, and it uses them as the building point for these sort of infinite, endless complexities.
So you said, like, the Wachowskis' best work, it does that?
Yeah.
So you're talking about that one movie they made, like, 2 decades ago?
Well, there's The Matrix, but I also like at least one of the Matrix sequels, and I like Cloud Atlas, and I really like Jupiter Ascending. And
you're
I
also, so weird, Nick! Oh,
and I also really like their first movie, Bound, as well.
Oh, did they make Bound? I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, this is... I love this show, and I can't wait to see more of it. I hope it gets renewed. I mean, I feel like this is a really sort of... It's a show that's very earnest, and it has a lot of, you know, humanity to it, but it doesn't feel stuffy about it. Because it is also... Mm-hmm. It is also a very violent show. It's also a very filthy show. There is a one point where the Sense8s have a giant orgy, and...
Well...
Yeah.
Well, you sold me.
And
is that the thing for this television season is orgies? Because wasn't there an orgy in True Detective?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Well, while we're recommending Netflix original programming, I'll say that the newest season of BoJack Horseman just hit,
mm-hmm.
and that's a brilliant show.
So you can watch Sense8 first, and then you can watch BoJack Horseman.
BoJack Horseman is 12 episodes, 30 minutes each.
Uh-huh. Oh crap.
Animated. It's got Will Arnett, speaking of Arrested Development. Very funny. Very insightful. Check it out. Amanda, would you like to recommend a Netflix original programming before we go?
I'm still trying to get Netflix to put all every season of Night Court on their schedule. So, actually, I don't even. I have been watching
maybe
something.
Bloodline's really good.
I've been mainlining Kitchen Nightmare. I'm just watching like sake. I don't know. Apparently, Danny and I are like just watching shows that have been on the air forever and no one talks about anymore because he's watching Law and Order SVU.
I was about to say Danny was talking about SVU the other week.
That's just fantastic. He and I were tweeting about it.
Mother of God. All right. Well, that's it for today. Coming to Blu-ray, White God. That's the only thing I'll say.
We're not going to do Blu-rays?
It's like White God. That's it.
Yeah, there's really nothing.
And then fucking Home and The Water Diviner. I mean, like...
The Water Diviner.
Yeah. So, White God, which I want to see. Maybe I'll get to see that before next episode.
Well, you're a dog lover, right? You're a big dog lover.
Yeah, I own a dog. Yeah, sure.
Well, yeah, you might have a tough one. Might have a tough time with this one. It's fantastic, though, that the dog who plays Hagen, the lead dog, is a fantastic actor.
Are dogs portrayed in like a negative light, or are they mistreated?
Oh, no, no, no. I would say that this movie is a combination. If Richard Adams and Eisenstein collaborated on a film, that is what White God is.
Okay. Well, I look forward to it. So that's it. Thank you for listening, everyone. Next week, we'll be talking about Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. Try to stop me. Can't be done. Until then, let's tell the fine people at home where we can be found. Nick Newman.
Thefilmstage.com and twitter.com/Nick_Newman.
And Amanda Waltz.
You can find me on Twitter at Media Waltz, also on Letterboxd as Media Waltz, and you can also check out my film blog, Steel Cinema, on WordPress.
And you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/BrianJerome, as well as thefilmstage.com and my personal site, dearfilm.net. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Tune in next week.